From Bogota, Colombia, this is Free Speech Radio News for Thursday, June 4th, 2009. President Obama visits Egypt, where he seeks a fresh start between the US and Muslims around the world. North Korea puts two American journalists on trial. And a humanitarian worker in Tucson is convicted for littering the Arizona desert. I'm Manuel Rueda. Please stay tuned for these stories and more. But first, this news.
I'm Jess Burns with headlines for Free Speech Radio News. Internal Palestinian clashes between Fatah and Hamas in the West Bank are steadily intensifying, threatening any possibility of a unified Palestinian government. Four Palestinians have been killed in the past day, bringing the death toll since Saturday to 10. FSRN's Ghassan Benoura reports.
Today's clashes in the northern West Bank city of Qalqilia started early in the morning and continued until midday. The gunfight erupted after Hamas fighters opened fire at a vehicle that belongs to the Palestinian Security Forces, killing one, officials reported. The security forces then surrounded a building where three Hamas fighters took cover. Witnesses said security forces stormed the building after heavy exchange of fire and found the three fighters dead. On Saturday, Hamas fighters clashed with Fatah, leaving two fighters, a civilian, and three security officers dead. Fawzi Barhoum, a spokesperson of Hamas in Gaza, sees the recent violence as another obstacle in the unity talks.
Because of this crime, the Hamas movement is now seriously studying the possibility of suspending talks with Fatah.
The Fatah-controlled government in Ramallah announced earlier this week that all weapons should be collected to restore law and order. Dr. Sahar Kawasma is a Fatah legislator in the West Bank.
We believe in the authority of the law, and everyone should abide by it. We also believe that the internal dialogue will be the only way to dismantle all obstacles facing our national unity.
Despite repeated attempts over the past months to form a unified Palestinian government, an agreement between Fatah and Hamas has not been reached. Ghassan Bannoura, FSRN, Bethlehem.
The European Union's parliamentary elections open today in Britain and the Netherlands. In the wake of the economic crisis, conservative parties are expected to make gains. Other members of the union will have their turn at the polls over the next few days. FSRN reporter Diletta Varlese in Italy has the details.
The European Union was designed to be an example and insurance of democracy and economical growth for all its members. The European Parliament, a legislative body comprised of 736 seats divided among the 27 member nations, makes decisions that govern the Union's policies and ultimately affect the lives of all Europeans. But past law voter turns out suggests citizens do not feel a political connection to the EU, and despite the current financial crisis, voter turnout is expected to be low once again. Italy will have its turn voting in the EU election on the 6th and 7th of June. Results will be available by the end of the week. For FSRN, Diletta Varlese, Brescia, Italy.
Last night, the governor of New Hampshire signed legislation making same-sex marriage legal. The state becomes the sixth in the country to do so. The law will go into effect on January 1st, 2010. And finally, an update to a story FSRN has been following about a hunger strike at a Texas immigration detention center. Human rights groups say they are concerned about an immigrant detainee who was suddenly moved to Louisiana for deportation yesterday. His transfer comes after he spoke with representatives of Amnesty International at the Texas Detention Center, where he was leading the hunger strike. Ansel Herz reports.
39-year-old Ram McCarty has lived in the United States since he was 15 months old. He was born in the Democratic Republic of Congo. He has never been to Haiti, where his parents are from, but he is scheduled to be deported there in about 1 week. For the past month, Cardi has helped lead a hunger strike at the Port Isabel Detention Center near Brownsville, Texas. After speaking with Amnesty International staff earlier this week, Cardi was woken up Wednesday by prison guards and informed he was going to be transferred. Sarnata Reynolds, the Refugee Program Director at Amnesty International USA, describes what followed.
We were told by other immigrants in the detention facility that an altercation took place and that there was a use of force by the immigration guards. His early morning transfer, after having spoken to us, seemed to have a chilling effect on the immigrants that we spoke to after that day, because there was a lot of fear that he had been moved and transferred quickly because he had spoken to us.
Community activists who spoke to detainees in the facility say Ramakirti was threatened, beaten, and removed for speaking out about the conditions inside. Aniyansa Garza with the Southwest Workers Union told FSRN she is worried about escalating repression of other protesting detainees inside the Port Isabel Detention Center. Ansel Hers, FSRN Austin.
And that's headlines for Free Speech Radio News from Eugene, Oregon. I'm Jess Burns.
In an eagerly anticipated speech broadcast around the world, U.S. President Barack Obama spoke in Cairo today. Aya Batraoui reports.
There were only a few select cars today on what is normally one of Cairo's most congested roads. The entire area surrounding Cairo University was cordoned off for President Obama to deliver a speech to the Muslim world. At the top of the speech, he came with a message that sparked a roar of applause.
And I'm also proud to carry with me the goodwill of the American people and a greeting of peace from Muslim communities in my country. Assalamu alaikum.
Assalamu alaikum is a common greeting among Muslims that means may peace be upon you. American University in Cairo's Dr. Abdullah Schleifer was among the 3,500 selected to attend Obama's speech at Cairo University's Grand Hall. Schleifer, who's also editor-at-large of the American-based Islamica magazine, says the choice of the word Assalamu alaikum is significant.
Enough for me and everyone, just that he greeted Muslims as, instead of saying hi, you know, which is a universal global language, he said Assalamu alaikum. You know, that alone brought tears to my eyes.
Obama said that tension has been fed by colonialism that denied rights to many Muslims. He acknowledged that the Cold War used Muslim-majority countries, most notably Afghanistan, as proxies without regard to their own aspirations. And his message to the wider Muslim world was clear.
I've come here to Cairo to seek a new beginning between the United States and Muslims around the world, one based on mutual interest and mutual respect, and one based upon the truth that America and Islam are not exclusive and need not be in competition.
But American protesters outside Cairo University want more from their president.
We need a new paradigm shift here. And the U.S. has to lead the way and be a model.
The American students were in Gaza just days earlier to deliver needed aid to the people there. But in his speech today, Obama did state that second to the threat of extremism, the Palestinian-Israeli conflict is the most important issue that needs to be resolved for lasting peace in the Middle East. He said that America's bond with Israel is unbreakable and urged people of all faiths to understand the depth of the Holocaust. But he also said that Israel's continued encroachment of Palestinian land by continued Israeli settlement must stop.
At the same time, Israelis must acknowledge that just as Israel's right to exist cannot be denied, neither can Palestine's. The United States does not accept the legitimacy of continued Israeli settlements.
One of the reasons President Obama chose Cairo to deliver the speech from is because it is home to Al-Azhar, the historic mosque known for its scholars. Al-Azhar fell under government authority nearly 60 years ago, but remains one of the leading centers of Islamic thought in the world. Sheikh Tantawi of Al-Azhar, considered the highest Muslim cleric in Egypt, told FSRN that he felt the president's message will be widely accepted by Muslims across the world.
President Obama's words were clear and conclusive, and his words were truthful, particularly when he said there would be no side chosen over another. And these are words that would be accepted by the wider public.
Obama quoted the Quran in his speech four times to the surprise and delight of many Muslims around the world. Blogger Wa'il Abbas, who was in the audience at Cairo University, believes the speech fell short.
But still, I cannot deny that I'm disappointed. He did not address the issues of democracy and the issues of freedom properly.
President Obama's decision to make this speech from Cairo drew criticism from rights groups because of U.S. support of Egyptian President Hosni Mubarak's regime, which has ruled Egypt for 27 years. Egypt is also the second largest recipient of U.S. aid after Israel. But student Nada Maher, who was a skeptic before hearing the speech, says she now has some hope.
I feel that it's changing. It's not just like words we hear when the U.S. president says that he will not accept what has been done before. It means that he's talking seriously. He's taking it seriously. He's not just saying words that will, you know, just finish after his speech.
Aya Batraoui, FSRN, Cairo.
Chinese authorities blanketed Beijing's Tiananmen Square with police officers today and prevented most journalists from filming at the site as the world commemorates the 20th anniversary of the Tiananmen massacre. Thousands died in 1989 as government troops cracked down on pro-democracy demonstrations. But the incident is such a taboo in China that it wasn't mentioned by any of the local papers. There were no protests reported on the mainland, although some 150,000 people did hold a vigil in the autonomous city of Hong Kong. In part two of our series on the Tiananmen anniversary, Daniel Bastar brings us the voices of today's China, as it looks back on one of its modern tragedies.
20 years after the 1989 massacre, things have changed on the scene of Tiananmen Square. People still gather here, not to protest, but to take pictures of the flag ceremony performed every day at sunrise and sunset by the elite corps of China's People Liberation Army. For many Chinese people, the Tiananmen movement doesn't evoke anything clear anymore. On the quiet campus of Beijing University, once a hotbed of political activism, students are a bit embarrassed when questioned about it. Most of them recognize they know quite little about the Tiananmen protests. Near a lake, 23-year-old Liu Dan is sitting on a bench next to her boyfriend, Li Wenyang. She's studying law, he's into economics.
For our generation, it's already in the past. Some students know things about it, but we tend to consider it part of a historical process. A society needs this to develop itself, and sometimes you cannot avoid this kind of students' movement. But at that time, China had to face a lot of pressure. The priority was to reform the economy, then reform the military. Perhaps the students had other views.
Political reform is a very high objective, but before achieving it, you have to go through an economic development process.
The viewpoints of Liu and Liz are representative of many of today's youth here in China. They are not apolitical, but for them, the priority is still the economy. According to Hong Kong-based sinologist Jean-Philippe Béja, the Communist Party largely succeeded in swallowing civil society.
This party still has a very rigid hierarchy and organization. But it happened to be very flexible to handle Chinese contradictions. It managed to co-opt a large part of Chinese society, its elite and the middle class, to whom it brought a better standard of living in return for the new social contract. You don't question the nature of the regime, so that we will have better material living conditions and China will become a powerful and prosperous country. But to achieve that, we have to restrict freedom of speech.
In Hong Kong, where people have access to free press and independent information, demonstrations are organized to commemorate the Tiananmen massacre. There were around 5,000 marching in the streets last Sunday. Li Chongfeng is the curator of an exhibition in which young artists expressed their views on the June 4th massacre.
People of the former generation see it as something tragic and very sad. When it happened, I was only five. Some of these artists were not even born. So we have good hindsight. We can play black humor around contemporary China's absurdities as a kind of revenge over history.
The exhibition displays a reconstitution of the Tiananmen massacre in Lego toys. Wax-made tanks melt with candles, the symbol of Hong Kong's annual commemoration wake. But many artists are able to freely express their views, like the China hip-hop collective Forbidden in the mainland but produces in Hong Kong. Their song 6489 is a clear evocation of the bullets that killed the students 20 years ago. Despite the denials of the government, the flame still flickers on here and there as this song sings. Daniel Bastar, Free Speech Radio News, Beijing, China.
The trial of American journalists Yuna Lee and Laura Ling began today in North Korea. In advance of the trial, vigils for their release were held in 9 cities across the U.S. Africa Jones reports from San Francisco.
Around 100 people gathered in front of San Francisco City Hall calling for the release of Yuna Lee and Laura Ling. Rob Everett is a former roommate of Laura Ling who helped organize the San Francisco rally.
Two women have been arrested by the North Korean government while they were reporting on Korean refugees on the Chinese-Korean border. And we are wanting to just get them home and let them know that we're thinking of them, let their families know that we're supporting them.
On March 17th, Yuna Lee and Laura Ling were arrested by North Korea for allegedly entering the country illegally and committing hostile acts. Family members say the reporters were working on a human trafficking story for San Francisco-based Current TV and are adamant that if Lee and Ling crossed the border, it was unintentional. Holly Gibson worked with both Lee and Ling at Current TV.
I know that both women had no intention of crossing into North Korea if they did, and so all we really want to do is get them home to their families, get Yuna back home to her daughter Hannah, and get them home safe.
North Korea and the U.S. have no diplomatic ties. That and rising tensions on the Korean Peninsula have made negotiating for Lee and Ling's release difficult. After expelling U.N. inspectors and leaving nuclear disarmament talks in April, North Korea detonated 2 nuclear bombs, one last week. And the country is said to be preparing new missile tests, including a long-range ballistic missile capable of reaching the U.S. The U.N. is reportedly discussing a resolution against the test and other possible sanctions. In the weeks after Lee's and Ling's arrest, family members initially remained quiet, hoping not to inflame an already tense situation. But this week, relatives began making media appearances. Laura Ling's sister, journalist Lisa Ling, spoke with NBC's Today Show.
The situation is so sensitive, and we all sit and we watch the news breathlessly, and we see that the tension on the Korean Peninsula is just escalating continuously, and we just felt like now is the time to try and urge both governments to communicate. You know, our two countries don't have a diplomatic relationship,
right.
So contact between the two has been limited at best, and we as the families just felt like we need to try and encourage our countries to talk and resolve this issue separate from the greater nuclear issue.
The families of Lee and Ling have received letters from the two and a phone call from Laura Ling last week. Experts say Yuna Lee and Laura Ling could face up to 10 years of hard labor if convicted. Africa Jones, FSRN, San Francisco.
A federal jury in Tucson, Arizona, has convicted No More Death volunteer Walter Staten for knowingly littering when he placed gallon jugs of water along heavily traveled migrant trails. Thousands of migrants have died along the U.S.-Mexico border since the 1990s, when border enforcement policies shifted migration corridors to increasingly remote locations, like the Buenos Aires Wildlife Refuge in southwest Arizona. Amanda Schauger observed Staten's 2-day trial and files this report.
The humanitarian aid group No More Deaths, formed in 2004 to provide water, food, and medical assistance to migrants walking through the Arizona desert. Last December, federal officials charged Walter Staten and 3 others in the group with knowingly littering, disposing, or dumping garbage on the Buenos Aires National Wildlife Refuge. Staten says he refused to pay the $175 fine due to his moral and faith-based convictions and elected to go to trial. There are other groups that also provide water, including Humane Borders, which has over 90 water stations in southern Arizona, including sanctioned stations in the 118,000-acre refuge. But the judge in the trial didn't permit founder Reverend Robin Hoover to testify.
They don't want to understand the motivations of this young man to put out life-saving water. We've been putting water on the refuge for 8 years. We've done so without any major incidents. We have saved lives.
In a written statement, federal prosecutors said The placing of plastic jugs on the Buenos Aires Wildlife Refuge contributes to a serious garbage problem, which degrades the habitat of these natural resources. Despite the guilty verdict, Staton says he remains committed to his cause.
As a humanitarian movement, myself being part of No More Deaths, we're going to be doing what we can to end the deaths in the desert. So if that means putting water out or going out as trained medical professionals to give direct assistance, that's what we're going to be doing until the situation changes where migrants aren't having to walk through the desert to cross into the United States.
Staton faces a maximum penalty of 1 year of confinement and a $100,000 fine. Amanda Schager, Free Speech Radio News, Tucson.
And in related news, grassroots activists from around the country are meeting in Washington, D.C. to discuss a comprehensive plan for immigration reform. They say they will pressure President Obama and Congress to draft new immigration laws this year. FSRN's Karen Miller has more.
Gustavo Torres is executive director of Casa de Maryland, a group that works with day laborers. Torres joined more than 700 immigration advocates in Washington, D.C. on Thursday. They're calling for President Obama and Congress to move on immigration reform this year.
President Obama is very clear and repeated several times, many times during the campaign and actually as a president. It's a priority for him, immigration reform in this year. We believe, and it's very simple, we need 270 votes in the Congress, and we are going to ensure that it's going to happen. We're working with the president, and now our goal that we have is to ensure that we are focused in the Congress, and it's exactly what we are going to do. Our responsibility is to communicate the message to the Congress. We want immigration reform, and we want now.
But Torres says many advocates know the economy and health care may be a hindrance. Illinois Representative Luis Gutierrez spoke at the event. He said on the House side, the votes may be there for the reform, but the political will might not be.
It seems like all we have to do is, you know, call the dance, you know, everybody go out on the floor and let's do this. I mean, you know, in Washington, we can be for a lot of things. And do we have the political will to see them come to fruition?
So not sure on that?
Huh?
Not sure on that.
I don't know. That's what we're organizing. That's why we're here. That's why you got over 700 community-based organizers here. Make sure it happens. That's the only way you're going to find out. That's the only way, not so much you're going to find out, it's the only way you're going to make sure it happens.
Some steps are currently being made, however. This week, Congressmember Mike Honda of California introduced the Reuniting Families Act. The act would help to streamline the immigration application process. On the Senate side today, Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid also put immigration reform on the table while speaking at a press conference to support Supreme Court Justice nominee Sonia Sotomayor.
It has to be comprehensive. It has to make sure that we have secure borders, north and south. We have to have a guest worker program that's meaningful. A guest worker program is more than agriculture. We need it in the fishing industry. We need it in the tourism business. So we have to have a good guest worker program. Number three, we have to do something about the 11 million people who are in this country who are undocumented, have improper papers. We need to have a pathway to legalization for those people.
Reid said there would be requirements to learn English and pay taxes as well. He also laid out a timeline for the reforms.
I am not going to deal with immigration on a piecemeal basis. It's comprehensive immigration reform. I'm going to do my very best. It's going to happen this session, but I want it this year, if at all possible.
So far this year, there have been several meetings in Congress on immigration. Members of Congress and advocates will be meeting with the president on immigration reform on June 17th. Karen Miller, FSRN, Washington.
The U.S. Senate is getting closer to revealing legislation to reform health care. Although details on the plans have not been finalized, a Massachusetts-type health plan of universal coverage is a possible model. Meanwhile, advocates for a government-run single-payer system continue to make their concerns heard. FSRN's Leanne Caldwell walks us through what this all means for health consumers.
Two bills have been written to drastically reform the healthcare system. Currently, 1,300 health insurance providers are the intermediary between health consumers and doctors. They decide rates, reimbursement fees, and who gets care. The two bills offered in Congress create a single-payer system to cover everyone. It would combine all 1,300 health insurance providers into one to be run by the government. The program would be an expansion of Medicare. Dr. Marcia Engels, the former editor-in-chief at the New England Journal of Medicine and lecturer at Harvard. She's an advocate of the single-payer idea.
It's not the best option, it's the only option. You sometimes hear that a single-payer system is unrealistic, but in fact what's unrealistic is everything else.
Here's how it would work. I get a card in the mail. It's called the National Health Insurance Card. Perfect timing because I have a nagging sore throat. I call any doctor in my area to make an appointment. When I go to the doctor, I show them my card. The doctor gives me a prescription and I go on my way. No copay, no deductible. The government pays the bill and reimburses the doctor. But the government must get the money from somewhere. Dr. David Himmelstein is a primary care doctor in Cambridge, Massachusetts, and a professor at Harvard. He explains the general cost structure.
In aggregate, the American people would pay what they're now paying for health care, but on average, poor people would pay significantly less. Rich people would pay significantly more.
Payment would be in the form of taxes. Most employees and employers would see an additional 3.3% increase of their payroll tax. If I make $33,000 per year, I would pay just over $1,000 in taxes. My employer would pay the same. The richest would pay an additional 5%. All those extra taxes would replace the monthly health insurance premiums now paid by both the employee and the employer. Let's compare that with the plan that is being considered in the Senate. It's modeled after Massachusetts' health care plan, which makes every person buy health insurance from a private insurance company. If my employer provides my health insurance, nothing changes. But if I don't have health insurance and want to go to a doctor as a young, healthy person with a sore throat, first I need to buy health insurance from one of the private insurance companies. I could go online, but I decided to call the state of Massachusetts instead.
Thank you for calling the state's health connector. Your connection.
So let's say I still make $33,000 per year. The cheapest plan I found would cost me $2,600 for the year. Because it's the cheapest, I'll get that one. Now I need to go to the doctor. I find a doctor across town that takes my insurance. The doctor sees me for my sore throat. Now it's time to pay. Oh, my plan has a $2,000 deductible. So I pay for my doctor's appointment in full. I come to find out that I'll pay nearly $5,000 before I see the benefits of this health insurance. Oh, also in Massachusetts, I get fined $1,000 if I decide that I don't want or can't afford health insurance. So I don't have to pay $5,000 before my health insurance kicks in. President Obama says he wants to lower costs. He also says he wants a mix of those two scenarios, and he's working with Congress to reach a delicate balance. He prefers not to make everyone go through private insurance companies, like in Massachusetts, but he wants to keep private health insurance an option. Independent Senator Bernie Sanders of Vermont authored the single-payer legislation in the Senate. He says a Massachusetts-type plan won't work.
If we can't do it right, it's probably best not to do it at all.
The Senate could reveal health care legislation in the next 2 weeks. Single payer will likely not be part of the plan. Leanne Caldwell, FSRN, Washington, D.C.
And that will do it for today's newscast. You've been listening to Free Speech Radio News. From Bogota, Colombia, I'm Manuel Rueda.